you received a check for 3 years straight. So and I was why the would biggest, they stop now?
Right? I was the biggest believer. I had the most money in it.
Yeah.
Investor guy stops taking my calls. And during that time, I liquidate my assets and I'm paying my clients September, October, November, December out of my own pocket.
Wow.
All with promises that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Also during that time, I get a phone call. And on the other end of the phone, I hear, this is Special Agent Mark Smith. We understand you have business dealings with Investor Guy. We need to talk.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. Guys, you have me and a guest today. Kel's enjoying the month of July with his family in California. Much needed, much deserved. And so today I'm excited to have Michael Isom on the podcast, author and co-author. So you have a couple books out there. You know, instead of me trying to, you know, read off your resume, which is super impressive, if you will, take a few minutes, you know, tell people a little bit about yourself, because the book that he just came out with, What We're Worth, I just got done with that yesterday. It was just a 2-day read. It was a page turner. So I'm excited for him to share some of those concepts. But first, I want you guys to kind of get to know Mike a little bit more before we kind of dive into some of the concepts in the book.
Beautiful. Trevor, thank you.
Yeah,
it's exciting to be here. Yeah. You know, the podcast interviews up until now have been at home on Zoom. And with you guys being here local in St. George, man, it's a great feeling.
The in-person's just different. Yeah. It's a different, but, you know, I'm a big believer in energy and frequency and putting two people in the same room that have some of the same ideas or thoughts or, you know, life principles.
100%.
You know, it just kind of, you vibe off of each other and the frequency raises and it makes for a great episode. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And a little bit about myself. I was born and raised here in St. George and I love dirt bikes, motorcycles, still passionate. This afternoon, I'm headed up on a trip with some buddies to Northern Utah. But my first motorcycle was a Yamaha YZ50 that I rode around in elementary school, went to East Elementary here in St. George. Wow. And my first job was in seventh grade, and I worked at Cycle Town Yamaha down on the Boulevard 333 West, St. George
just
Boulevard.
Like from birth.
Definitely. And I worked there in seventh grade making $2.25 an hour.
The big bucks. You were rolling it in then.
This is like 1981.
You were penny candy rich at that point.
I was washing bikes, sweeping floors, emptying trash. But I did that because it's how I was able to afford what I wanted in my life at that time. And at that time, the priorities were motorcycles, clothes for school, and dating girls. Not always in that order.
Yeah.
My first job, the job that I took in college after I left the motorcycle industry in college, was with a cell phone company. And my first 30 days in St. George, Utah, selling cell phones, I made $20,000 in 1993. That's 10 times what I was making at Yamaha.
Yeah,
I met my wife, Wendy. We had our two kids, Kennedy and Caden, and I'm living the American dream. I'm investing in rental real estate. I've got my IRA, my 401k from the cell phone industry.
You're checking off all the boxes. You're doing it right.
I've got it all going on.
Society says you're winning right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had a small interest in a convenience store down in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I'm like thinking to myself, I'm pretty good at this investing stuff. So I get into the financial services industry and become a financial planner. And that's when I meet Ray Hooper, Les McGuire, and Garrett Gunderson.
Was there somebody in your life that said, hey, this might be a good path for you? Or was there just a moment that you said, okay, I need to up my game and do something different? Like, how did that decision to go down that avenue happen for you?
Yeah, it was my desire to learn about money because I was making over 250 grand a year at a young age. And we were spending money like crazy and buying new cars. Mm. Thank goodness we did some investing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the clarity that I have today.
Yeah.
But I got into the financial services industry, and Garrett, Ray, Les, and I started marketing together. We had a company name that we shared the name together, and we wanted to help other people to be successful with money. And it was all around the money at first, helping them make money and all around money and investing. And Les came to me after a few years, and he said, hey, I've got this real estate deal that you might want to look at. And I trust Les. I do my due diligence, and it looks pretty good. And so I meet with investor guy that Les knew, and I put $50,000 into this investment. And investor guy is paying me 5% a month. I know that's a red flag now. Hang on.
I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
This is
like,
2004.
It's too good to be true.
Yeah. Just hang on. Yeah. There's more to this story.
Yeah.
And the checks are coming every month. And so I'm like, all right, here's another $250,000. So now I've got 300 grand in there, and I'm getting checks every month. So I put in another $500,000. And I've
on
got
on top of the 300.
I've got 800 grand in this, and the checks are coming every month. So I'm thinking to myself,
those are good checks too.
Those are big checks.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, I bet some of my clients would want in on this. So I share it with Charles, Kate, a few other people. Next thing you know, after a number of years, we've got over $10 million with investor guy, and the checks are coming every month until they stop.
Until they didn't.
August of 2007, no checks. September, no checks. I'm freaking the fuck out.
Yeah. So like how what was the time frame? The checks were good for a year,
2004 to 2007.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it was consistent. Like,
yep.
Just as consistent as the sun coming up every day, you received a check for 3 years straight. So
and I was
why
the
would
biggest,
they stop now?
Right? I was the biggest believer. I had the most money in it.
Yeah.
Investor guy stops taking my calls. And during that time, I liquidate my assets, and I'm paying my clients September, October, November, December out of my own pocket.
Wow.
All with promises that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Also during that time, I get a phone call. And on the other end of the phone, I hear, this is Special Agent Mark Smith. We understand you have business dealings with investor guy. We need to talk. Mm-hmm. Special Agent means Federal Bureau of Investigations.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, I'm signing a deal with the feds. And I'm taping a wire to my chest, trying to figure out where all that money went, mine and my clients.
Mm.
But it's too late. Money's gone.
Wow.
And I can't hold it together. I shut down my business. The stress, the anxiety, the fear, the doubt, the worry. I'm not just having an occasional drink in the evening. I'm drinking myself silly.
Mm.
I'm on antidepressant meds. I'm taking narcotic pain pills to just numb myself out.
Mm.
And I was not healthy, and I knew it. There's a knock at our front door at 6 a.m. one morning, and I open it up, and it's my in-laws, my wife's family, all of them there, brothers, sisters, parents. And I said, hey, what's up? It's early. And they said, we're here to move Wendy and the kids out. I couldn't blame them. I knew I wasn't healthy to be around. And 12 hours later, facing the reality of my decisions, I found myself on the bathroom floor. And I loaded a bullet in a 9mm Ruger P89 pistol and pressed it up against the roof of my mouth with my finger on the trigger, screaming, why, God, why? And I felt a rush come over my body that I hadn't felt before. I carefully set the gun down, and I committed to God in that moment and myself that I would extract the lessons that led me to that point of putting that gun in my mouth, apply those lessons in my life, and share them with as many people as I possibly can. Mm. And that's why I'm so passionate about the core message in my new book, What We're Worth.
Yeah. Wow. That's unfortunate that you have to get to such a low spot to realize what's important, right?
100%.
you know, and it shows that how easy it is to, again, put value on the wrong things. I guess the things that maybe other people value. If they value money, it must be so important. They don't value your kids or your wife. That's your kids and your wife, right? But money is something that everybody values and puts on some sort of pedestal. So if you have those things, then by default, you're on a pedestal that other people can look at. Reading, I love the book. It definitely is a page turner. Cool. It's an easy read.
Cool.
There's many lessons throughout the, from the beginning to the very end. And then even, you know, at the very end, you talking about, hey, this is, you know, yes, it's a fable, but you know, this is kind of my story with a, you know, few caveats to it to, you know, make it all kind of come together and provide the lessons that I think are super important, especially in this day and age, because I think that we're moving further and further away from, you know, standards, values,
core values, for sure.
What we place importance on, right?
Clarity, yeah. Like ownership, accountability,
all of
self-reliance.
Yes, yes.
100%.
Like looking within and having self-worth rather than, you know, some external worth or piece of paper that says, hey, I'm worth something because there's seven figures, you know, in a bank account, right?
Yeah.
And I've recently gone through that journey myself over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years because when you grow up a certain way and, you know, you see that the problems that you, have or your parents have, or in your upbringing is mainly around money. If you can solve that one problem, all your problems in your eyes are now solved
100%.
Because that was literally the issues. Yep. Hey, the reason why the lights went off and my mom's crying in the kitchen to the utility department, that's a money issue.
Thinking it's about money.
It's a money issue, yep. Right? Is my thought as an 8-year-old watching her cry.
Yep.
We're having to light candles to keep the house lit.
And how many out right? there listening right now are saying, yeah.
You know, food on the table, all of that. It was just a struggle. And the struggle was around money, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to live like this when I get older. That was a commitment that I made to myself at a young age, because I was embarrassed to have friends to the house or in middle school or high school. I didn't want anybody coming over, girls asking me to dances, and one girl did. She decorated the top bunk in my bedroom because that was mine, and there's me and my three other brothers. So she's walking into a room seeing two bunk beds, like, which bed's his? Instead of decorating a room, they're decorating and that's embarrassing, yeah. You know, at that age. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to get rich. I'm going to make a bunch of money. But what happens when you commit, you know, 10, 12, 15 years to making money and you sacrifice so much in order to get to this thing that's going to solve all your problems and it doesn't, then what?
Yeah. Let's dig into that.
You know, at that point you end up at a lower point than you were when you were at least chasing money, because when you were chasing money, there was hope for something better on the chase.
Yeah.
But once you've caught it and you're like, okay, I'm doing well, I have no reason to have problems now because the financial side of things is now taken care of, right? Yeah. But then you find yourself at even a lower spot and you're like, okay, there's something more to life than just this paper, you know, frequency, currency, whatever you want to call it. I think, you know, money is a low frequency thing, right? I think when we vibrate at a high frequency, you know, we can attract money, but if we go just directly after money, rather than the principles and the value that we bring to the world, in order to attract money, then I think that's low frequency, right? When you go directly at it versus just what is money a byproduct of? Right? The value that I can bring to the world.
How was it
right?
derived?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that's been my journey over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, making, you know, millions of dollars and then saying, okay, this is it. This is what I sacrificed 12 years for. And then at that point, there's a lot of learning opportunities, provided you do the deep reflection and you ask yourself the right questions. And then you realign what your definition of success really is, and what makes you happy and fulfilled and brings you peace, right? We were talking about that prior to getting on the show. Is like, I think everybody's looking to feel fulfilled and, you know, feel a sense of peace. How do people get to the point of finding fulfillment and finding peace, even while they're on the path to trying to become financially stable?
That's great. So I'm sure your listeners, and I'm familiar with your shows and been commenting for years on posts and stuff. Yeah. I feel like we have a lot of alignment in that way. Or as you're saying all of that, and as they heard my story, have found themselves at different stages in that entire process of where they're at in their life. They're still hustling and making cash, or if they're to that point where they've made this money and then they're searching for deeper meaning and purpose in their life or whatever point they're at. In business, it's essential, wouldn't you say, for someone to have a income statement and a balance sheet?
Correct.
100%.
Has to.
Got to know your numbers.
Yes.
Right? You guys talk about this all the time. It's like what basics 101. Got to know your numbers. So a balance sheet, let's just take a balance sheet, for example, where there's assets and liabilities on that balance sheet. And a very basic example of this for a property value balance sheet would be an asset of, say, a home worth $1 million and a liability worth a liability of $500,000. The equity, assets minus liability equal the equity, would be $500,000 in that example, right?
Correct.
That's a property value balance sheet.
Yeah.
Every one of us has an adjoining balance sheet that I call a human life value balance sheet. Human life value. It's our mental capital. We have assets and liabilities on it also. It's our beliefs, it's our education, it's our morals, our values. Relationship capital is a line item on the human life value balance sheet. When I lost all that cash and almost took my life and committed to extract the lessons, one of the first people I called was Garrett Gunderson. Mm. And he shared with me this, and it has stuck with me to this day, which is you can choose to leverage your past experiences to create moving forward. And so that relationship with Garrett, and then next thing you know, I'm working with him and he's sending me leads through Wealth Factory. And then within a couple of years, he's sending me every single lead through Wealth Factory. And that's been worth tens of millions of dollars in both of our lives as a result of that relationship capital. So we all have a human life value balance sheet. I forgot about my human life value balance sheet, because my self-worth was tied up in my property value balance sheet, my cash assets. I lost all my cash assets, my property value, and therefore I felt worthless, of no worth. And the character in the book, David Chalcross, that you just read, that was him. It's also me.
Yeah.
And it may be you and you and you and you and you or other listeners that are out there today that place the significance. I'm not saying there's not worth. I'm not dollars follow value. It's a measurement. It's a tool, like all of that with money. We get that, but it's not the measurement. And so I hope that people that get the book, What We're Worth, will put more emphasis on their human life value balance sheet. And you guys teach this, you guys live this. I've been watching you guys for years. I have I've had conversations with you at the gym over the last couple of years around all of this. And I have a sense that you guys are living this and gaining more and more clarity on it, because when we seek to increase our human life value assets and we take liabilities, The Dark Side of the Light Chasers by Debbie Ford, Byron Katie, The Work, when we work on our liabilities, our limiting mindsets, and we transfer them over and extract a lesson, we can then make it an asset. Human life value, our mental capital, is the source and creator of all property value. So if we want to increase our property value, our cash, our assets, our business value, our ability to exchange and create in the marketplace, it's a simple formula. First, seek to increase your human life value, knowing and having faith that it will then translate into more property value.
Yeah.
And property value is the measurement of our human life value. It's the receipt. How do we know if something's of value to someone else? They're willing to exchange with us a dollar. That dollar is a receipt that what we provided for them was of value.
I like these type of conversations because they're deeper than the surface level shit, right? That you'll see on social media, whether it's the cars, planes, trains, you know, women, houses, you know, all of that stuff. You know, that to me is very, very surface level. But when you're starting to talk about liabilities versus assets in this, you know, human life value balance sheet, you know, a lot of things come to my mind, right? Like, yes, the limiting beliefs are, you know, a liability, sure. But there's always things that we could do to tweak, change, adjust, or improve some of the things that we do on a day-to-day basis,
100%.
Right? Like, are you smoking? Are you drinking? Are you, you know, like, is it the group of people that you hang out with that constantly gossip?
All
you
areas know, of our life.
That's a liability on the human life value balance sheet, right?
100%.
So that's what makes it kind of cool because it's easy to break down and just be like, oh, well, is this an asset or a liability? Like, there's no middle ground. Like, yeah, they're my friends from high school. They're good people, but they do this, this, and this. Well, that's not an environment that you need to put yourself in if you're trying to increase or raise your human life value and ultimately give more so that you have the ability to receive more.
And if they keep hanging out with those people, that tells me, as you're saying that tells me they're not clear about what they really want and what they stand for in their own life. They don't have that clarity.
So you believe that people just kind of go with the flow and keep what they've got because they have no clear vision. That's your.
Yeah.
So once somebody has to sit down, decide what it is that they want, and then decide the type of individual that they would need to become in order to receive that type of result.
What would it take? Who would I have to become?
Yes.
But that only starts with clarity around what I really want and why I want it. That's like fundamental. What do I want? Why do I want it? But first of all, it's okay to want what you want.
Yes.
Like some people, especially with a religious background, because I was raised in one.
Yeah.
I took on this mindset, which is a limiting belief, that it wasn't okay to have all these wants, all these desires. That was the dark side. No, it's healthy. So
Something has to propel you forward, right? Yes.
Yeah.
And if you don't want anything, then nothing will propel you forward. And I'm not an individual that believes that God gave you so much potential and conscious thought to create for you to do nothing with.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's like the parable of the talents, or, you know, burying your bushel and all of that. Yeah. Get out there and do something with it for sure. So Tony Robbins, I went to his Unleash the Power Within. My wife and I, our two kids, my assistant Lacey, I don't know, 2016, 2017, somewhere through that time, walked on fire. Man, Tony Robbins, he had 8,000 people in Dallas, Texas, in this massive space, all jumping and chanting at the same time. For his ability to move energy in that way is incredible. But he taught me, one of the many things that he taught me, is that every human has four basic needs, not wants.
Yes, I wanted to cover this. Yeah.
And it's in the book. Mm-hmm. Certainty is a need for every human. Uncertainty is a need, a basic human need. Significance and love. Certainty, uncertainty, significance, and love are the four basic needs. And again, whether it's myself, Trevor, Kel, any of your other guests on this show, test it for yourself.
Yeah.
Find out if this is true for you. Don't just take our word for it, right? Test it and find out. Uncertainty is variety and risk. It's a basic need of ours to have variety and risk in our life. So be conscious of that.
Yes.
Know that it's a basic need that we will fulfill. We will. It's a need. We will fulfill it. So where are you fulfilling it?
Yeah.
Are you conscious of where you're fulfilling it? Or are you gambling in some area of your life, whether with cash, relationships, the way you parent, your own life, the shit you put in your mouth, your body, exercise, don't exercise? Those are forms of gambling.
Yes.
Right? So be conscious of it. Get clear around in your own life about what you want and why you want it. And then go to work on it. Take the things that you guys teach in your podcast, the stuff in my book, all that. There's so much information around us, but people are overwhelmed with the information and not following it because there is so much information, but it's because they're not clear about what they want.
Yeah. They're too busy digesting rather than planning.
That's exactly right. Like, they're sawing and they're not sharpening the saw.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm a big believer that like our brain is overdosing on inputs, right? Like it's taking in so much on a day-to-day basis that it doesn't even have the time to do what it's designed to do, which is guide you, lead you. There is intuition, but if we're always distracted and our brain's always processing something, whether it's on TV, whether it's, you know, on our email or on social media, or whether it's the kids or the wife, or there's all of these inputs going on. And that's why I'm a big believer in, you know, alone time, getting away distractions and letting your brain do what it needs to unwind.
Yeah.
It's like a ball of yarn, like drop it and just let it unwind because it has thoughts and it can guide you, but you need to put yourself in the environment
to create that,
to create that so that it has the ability to do what it's designed to do. Right. Take a race car and put it out in the desert. That's not where it's designed to function and perform. Yeah. Put it on the track. Right. And so I just don't think that we're putting ourselves in the right environments in order to get the right results. We're just kind of waking up, doing the same thing that we did yesterday, hoping that we get lucky or something happens because we're a hard worker. We're tired when we get home so that, you know, we did a good day's work, right? Rather than like actually design it. Guess what? When you design your life, you're still going to be tired. There's going to be days where you're exhausted. When you don't design it, it's going to be the same way. You might as well have an actual result that you like at the end of the day. And what I mean by that is not just financial. It's a result of like self-worth, right? Like me going for a 3 mile or 3 hour run by myself, I'm creating an environment for my mind just to let it unwind. And then I also have a lot more self-worth when I get done because my mind knows that I'm willing to allocate time to me, above anything else. Right. And when you're investing time into yourself and you have a record of the past saying I've been doing this for a long period of time, your self-worth by default increases.
Yep.
But if you're not even spending a minute or 2 minutes or 5 minutes or an hour a day investing into yourself in one way, shape or another, whether it's reading, whether it's exercising, whether it's meditate, it doesn't matter to me the medium in which you're taking time for yourself. But if you're not doing that, how could you expect to have self-worth and confidence when you don't even give yourself time, energy, or effort to improve? You don't even think you're worth that, right? Yep. And so it makes it very difficult for you to have those type of feelings if there's never been a deposit in there. If there's no deposits, there's no equity in that account, right? Yep. So make deposits into yourself so that you have personal equity 100%. When you go out into the world, then you could create financial equities, right?
Yeah. So let's take the four basic needs a little bit further.
Okay. Because I wanted to also talk about the other two.
That's where I'm headed. Way to go.
Yeah.
So your listeners are going to find themselves in different periods of their life, right? They're hustling, they're still working on their four basic needs for themselves, their family, those around them. But for those that have stabilized the four basic needs of certainty, uncertainty, significance, and love, Garrett White and I have had many conversations around this, and we call it the chaos of abundance. I've got all these amazing things going on in my life, but something's still missing. Something's still missing. Yeah. Tony Robbins talks about the two higher spiritual needs.
Yes.
When we've stabilized the four basic needs, we seek for more. The more are the two higher spiritual needs, that of growth and contribution.
Yes.
Continuing to grow and contributing to other people's lives. Mm. Those are limitless.
Yes.
Those are endless. We can, I mean, I've committed to a life of growing. I as long as I can create and exchange value and someone wants that value, why would I ever retire from that?
Yeah.
Why would I? And at an even deeper core level, Trevor, when we've stabilized the four basic needs and we're working on continuing to grow and contribute, and I've tested this over the last 10 years, I've backed off a little bit. I've told myself, which was a limiting belief that I've now corrected, but I'm clear about it. So if you're finding yourself in this situation, you'll resonate with this. I told myself, I want to take my foot off the gas just a little bit and enjoy more of what I've created around me. Whoop, whoop, whoop. That's a big blinking red light for me now, because when I slowed down on my creation, I didn't feel worthy of all the results that I'd created around me up to that point. So it's out of self-interest, not selfishness, self-interest. For me, I'm fulfilled the most when I'm creating constantly in all areas of my life, personally and professionally, business, family, all areas of my life. I'm fulfilled at the deepest level when I'm striving towards things, when I'm creating at a higher level. I'm fulfilled the most and I create the most for those around me and all the results around me. I feel worthy of them.
Yeah. There was a youngster in the gym, you know, and he talked about, you know, goals. And of course, when you're young, your goals are around what? Just, you know, money, right? You know, hey.
Motorcycle, clothes, and girls.
Yeah, exactly. Early on, you already nailed it, right? If it goes fast and is sexy, you know, you want to be a part of it. And money comes fast and it goes fast, too. So that can fall in that category real quick. But he's like, he was saying something like, hey, yeah, you know, I want to make, my goal is to make $200,000. You know, he started doing some stuff on his own on the side and he started making a little bit of money. So now he's reevaluating some of his goals. And I can always tell when, you know, when somebody's first goal, when they bring that to the table and it's money, usually it's young. They haven't learned a lot through the process.
They're still seeking to stabilize those four basic needs.
And I told him, I said, you know what? I said, what happens when you get to 200 and then 300 and then 400? I said, it eventually has to stop being about the money and it has to start being about the growth that you go through, and the money just is a byproduct of it, because eventually the money's endless. So just finally commit to, hey, this is just the way that I live my life, is continuing to push myself, see what I'm capable of so that I can have self-worth. And when you have self-worth, the money comes just by default, as again, a byproduct, right? It's just so hard for youngsters to really digest that information, because we want to seek an end to struggle or to pain or to the discipline of what it really takes to be, you know, financially successful. And so it's like, hey, you know, at 200,000, it seems like I've hit a goal and there's an end there. But in reality, I did the same thing. If I make 100 grand a year, I'm going to be rich. Yeah. I'm this, I'm that. Yeah. That's my 18-year-old self, 19-year-old self. And then I made 100 grand. I looked around and said, where's the money?
Yeah.
Cause I already had it, like, dude, I can have this house, this boat, this truck, this, you know, and you're kind of breaking it down, but you're not really thinking about taxes, the gas or insurances, you know, at a young age, you just think 10 grand a month's just plenty. And then you say 200. You get 200, then you say 300, and then 400. And then it got to the point where it's like, okay, I want to make $1 million. And then you hit $1 million a year. And then you start thinking like, what do I do? Just 2 million and then 3 million and then 4. And then it's kind of endless.
Yep.
So rather than putting, you know, a goal on a financial aspect, I'm going to put goals on just who I become as an individual.
Human life value assets.
Right. And so like, that's, I think, why the book resonated with me a lot, because just over the last 2 or 3 years, I've really had to adjust and just believe and give it up to God and the universe or whatever, that as long as I pull these levers every single day and I do these certain things, I feel good about who I'm becoming. And that right there is what's missing in the world, is people just don't even feel good in their own body and mind. Yep. So therefore they, you know, try to do certain things to get outside recognition in order to have self-worth, because you think I'm worthy. Then by default, I get a little dopamine hit because you look up to me, or because I drive this fancy car, or because I live in that house. But
the individual that's driving that fancy car or living in that big old house could be depressed as shit, 100%. Putting a pistol in their mouth, ready to end it, while you're over there saying, man, that guy has it all.
Yep.
Right. And so really it comes down to how you view yourself and how you view the things that are actually truly important. Because if you're willing to disregard your family, your loved ones, your relationships in the pursuit of money so that you could feel valued or self-worth, you're going to end up at a very, very dark place.
100%.
Like just, that's just what it is. And the beautiful thing about it is I think that there's so many amazing things that happen in dark places. I do.
There can
also be extreme tragedies as well, right? Like for me, my life had to hit a rock bottom low as a drug addict for me to course correct, right? You hit an extreme low and then you course corrected, right? You have to be an individual that's willing to ask themselves those tough questions. When I was a drug addict, watching other people drive by with their kids and their wives, and I'm 24, 25, and they're about my same age, is this how I want my life to be? And like, I don't think people are sitting down even asking themselves the questions because they don't even want to know the answers because the answers would require massive change and work.
Yep.
Right? It's easier just to kick on Netflix and not ask those questions and just let another day go by.
Yep.
Right? And so if you're at a point in your life where one, you only value money, this is a great book to pick up. Two, if you're at a low spot, great book to pick up. Three, if you've already been through the ups and the downs and gone through kind of some of the stuff that we're talking about, it's a great book to pick up just to remind you of why you're doing what you're doing, because I think life has a way of making us drift away from why we're doing what we're doing, right? We can set out, to become a better version of ourselves, but guess what? Life gets real in 3 months. And why am I doing this? Why am I getting up early? Why am I reading? Why am I, and you start drifting away from why you're actually doing the things that you know that serve you. And then you buy an excuse like, I need to start enjoying some of the thing, you know, your brain tries to find its way in to sell you a reason to stop overexerting yourself or working yourself. And ultimately just in general to try to sell you to stop making progress in general. Right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately there's plenty of people that they bite that and buy whatever their brain is selling them. And then they end up back at a low spot
because of that
lack of clarity. They go through the ups and downs. Like they're at a high point and then they're at a low point and then a high, like there's things that you could do every day with consistency that can create, more consistent emotions on a day-to-day basis where your lows aren't as low and your highs aren't as high and you're just a little bit more even keel. And I think that your book brings that kind of full circle.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thanks for saying that. Yeah. The character in the book, David Shallcross, he gets bored in his business and, he pushes all his chips in on the table on a risky investment.
Probably wanted to feel alive again, man. If you're bored in your business and you're like, man, this is risky, but I feel like I'm in the game.
He wasn't focused on building his human life value assets. He was not clear about what the acre of diamonds that was right in front of him, his core business. He got bored because he wasn't growing. He wasn't working on his human life value assets. And so he started neglecting his business. And the business started going down and his investments over here that he had no knowledge or expertise in or control, when he lost all of that cash, it was too late in his business. His business partner, because he was neglecting his business for so long because he was bored and he was taking this high risk over here because of a lower self-worth, because he wasn't working on his human life value assets, feeling worthy of what he actually had in his life, he lost his business. He lost all his cash in that bad investment that he was gambling with. He was losing his family. And it's because he was gambling and he wasn't clear about what his number one investment was. So number one asset and number one investment, number one strategy is what I teach all of my clients. You are the number one asset. Human life values is the source and creator of all property value. You are the number one asset. People are assets. Things are not. this building, this table, these microphones have no value whatsoever till a human, you or I or another human, gives them value.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Number one investment in any of our lives, in your life, in any of the listeners' lives, are things that we control and have knowledge and expertise in. And then at a deeper level, that's the four basic needs. At a deeper level, the two higher spiritual needs of growth and contribution is that of purpose and passion. So things that we control, things that we have knowledge and expertise in, expertise, purpose, and passion is our number one investment. For those that own their own business, that's their business. For those in a career, it's the career that they're in.
Yeah.
So continue to invest in yourself, take risk, because it's a basic need that we will fulfill, and take risk in the area that you control, in your business, in your career. Increase your personal stock value. Take on the mindset of being an entrepreneur if you're an employee. What are books that I can read? What are courses that I can take if I'm an employee to increase my personal stock value, to be of more value to my employer? Some people want to be employees. Some people want to be business owners. We want and need both to make the world go around. And if that's where you're at, then do that, but focus on that. So David Chalkross in the book, he wasn't clear about that in his own life. I wasn't clear about that in my own life. And I got bored in my business and I started seeing the solution outside of myself and outside of my core business. Because I was making 5% a month on all this cash.
Ain't nothing better than that.
Right? And so in that gambling, I lost my business, almost lost my life, almost lost my family. And I haven't talked about reuniting with my family. I talked about them leaving me. I haven't talked about coming back with them. I will. I want to.
Yeah, please.
But the clarity around what's an actual investment and what is an asset in our life. So gain clarity around where you invest and where you don't. I'm here to say invest in things that you control and have knowledge and expertise in. Garrett Gunderson says there aren't good investments. There's only good investors. Mm. It may be real estate, maybe your own business. If you want to become a real estate investor, learn about real estate, take courses, learn about business. You want to be a business owner, learn from you guys about business owners. No better platform than what you guys provide for people to learn about how to be a business owner. You want to continue to be an employee, be the best damn employee there is out there. Continue to invest in yourself and get paid for that.
I agree with that. I mean, I was an employee of Kell's at one point. And I believed in that concept, like treating the business as it was your own business.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't, the thing about leaders is they're, you know, yes, you could be asked to lead or whatever, but like leaders just by default, like if it's in them, they want to serve and lead and it just is what it is. So I wasn't asked to do some of the things that I just started doing. Mm. Right. Cool. I saw that there was like a gap. It's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to manage the sales team. Well, you know, I think we can do this a little bit better in fulfillment. So I started
going with ideas.
I just started changing.
I started changing things even better.
Yeah. And then it got to the point where the business had lost a couple hundred grand. And I didn't have access to, you know, financials or anything like that. But I was making decisions on a day-to-day basis in terms of, you know, hiring, firing, making adjustments to pay scales or adjustments to fulfillment, handling all customer support while I was also a sales guy, just trying to figure out where there was a need. And show by example.
Beautiful.
What, like it's the old saying, don't ask somebody else to do it if you're not willing to do it.
Yeah.
Everybody saw that was on the front lines how I did it. And that if there was an issue, I'll call them, I'll take it, I'll do it, you know. And so I wanted to create that type of, you know, culture, right? It gets to the point where at the end of 1 year, it's right after Christmas, and they sit me down and said, there's no money left. Because they had another partner that was handling the finances up in the Salt Lake office. We were running the St. George office. But everybody up there was on nice fat salaries and friends and family, you know, like that whole ordeal, right? Yeah. Like the money's just going to keep going up and it's never going to go, almost where, you know, the ease of some of the success that's happened within the first, you know, 1 or 2 years got to their head. And it's just like, hey, there's enough money for everybody to play. Anyways, it gets to the point where my partner, Jeremy, has to take out $5,000 out of his personal account just to cover payroll right after Christmas. And they sit me down saying there's nothing left. And I say, okay, well, I know how to run it. Like, if you guys want to invest more money in it, you can, and I'll take care of everything else. I'll run kind of the day to day, and we can break off from, you know, homeboy up in Salt Lake and, you know, turn this thing around. Right. And they said, well, we value you more as a partner than we do as an employee. We've seen what you've done here and how you've taken care of things. If you want to come in with your own money, then you can. And that's what I did. And it was a $700,000 turnaround year one, just by watching the numbers, the balance sheet, right? Yep. Whether you're talking, that's a financial balance sheet, but there's a human life value balance sheet that, I think nobody's watching. Yep. Nobody's put it in such simple terms like that you've put it in and wrote about. And so I think that it's super cool to be like, well, duh, you would do that over here. But then over here, it's just like, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Right? The elusive obvious.
But yeah, you're just investing in any area that you're currently present. If you're at home, you should be investing into your home, whether your children or your wife, if you're at work, why would you not give 100% as an investment into your future earnings? Like it's impossible to give more for an extended period of time. I think the problem is people give more for a month or 2 months, almost like the gym membership thing. I'm going to go a month or two later. They fall out, right? So they give themselves credit for the work that they've done in a short period of time. And if it hasn't brought them some extreme reward or massive result, it's not worth the type of effort that they have to put forward because they're not getting the result that they think that they're deserving of, when in reality, it's about long-term, it's about consistency, and everything else will work itself out as long as you have the ability to show up in the right way, control the controllables, and invest more than what you're getting paid in the office or on the job site or the, like if there's
and
a guy
find joy in all that.
Yeah. Like that is an investment also not into your financial worth, because by default that will go up. A business owner will see that and say, wow, we have to reward that. But that's also an investment into your self-worth, because you can look around and say, I'm outperforming everybody else. And that's a deposit that you get to take with you forever. Not something that you take to your bank account and give to a bank teller, right?
Yep. So. Yep. So you're talking about a gym membership, but what books are people reading? What podcasts are they listening to? What are they doing to feed their mental capital, their human life value assets in their life? Are they being deliberate about that? Do they have daily routines? You told me you have a target, is it 10 pages a day?
Yeah, minimum.
Minimum 10 pages a day. And you run and you exercise and you eat a certain way. And you do all of that because you feel good to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's also what creates the most for those around you.
Well, it sucks to do it, but it sucks way more not to do it.
That's exactly right.
Because I would rather go through the suck of having a routine than going through the suck of being at a very dark and low place and being depressed.
Yeah.
Because when I'm not doing those things, I know for myself, I'm not making the investments in the areas that I should and I could.
Yep.
If provided I was intentional. And so then I end up in a dark, depressive state and therefore recommit to my fitness, recommit to the, and it just got to the point where I got old enough where I was just like, okay, I have data on myself now. I know when I do this, 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 and this, that I feel this way.
Here are the results.
Even if it's shitty, I still feel better than being at the low place that I have to crawl out from under and figure out how to recreate my life or recreate a routine and kind of start back from square one. Yep. So it's all shitty. You know, you might as well get something out of it, right? Yeah.
Keith Cunningham wrote a book called The Road Less Stupid. And Keith Cunningham is the rich dad in Rich Dad Poor Dad. Mm. And he's a billionaire. And he has a course that people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to go through called The Boardroom. And he, in his book, The Road Less Stupid talks about thinking time. And he talks about how we, especially powerful entrepreneurs, like to answer powerful questions. So actually being deliberate on a daily basis, just like you would exercising, to sit down and ask yourself powerful questions, because we'll answer them. Mm-hmm. We will. Mm-hmm. We love answering powerful questions that are asked to us. Mm-hmm. So be clear about that in your own life and ask and be, and on a daily basis or definitely weekly, but I love doing it daily. I love writing daily. And I talk about writing in my book and writing gratitude and celebrating and appreciating, but asking yourself powerful questions.
And because of that, I wrote it out today.
What, so because celebrate of your and appreciate?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So because I, so I do it every day, but I do it in my phone. Right. Yeah. And so,
there's something about pen and paper.
There is, Trevor. You know, there is. And I started doing it like a week or two ago. That's what was weird about it is, you know, I was doing, I like affirmations and, you know, I am this, I'm a runner. Even though I don't want to be, you know, I'm a great husband, a great father. I'm an example to many. I am disciplined. I'm a teacher. Yeah. I'm a student. I'm a leader, you know, all of these things in my notebook. And then, you know, when I read, and then I stopped doing it, like a week ago. And then I read your book the last couple of days, and I'm like sitting at the gym when I pulled up early this morning, I pull out my notebook and then, and write it out. And it does feel different versus just pulling out my notes in my cell phone and just writing my home, my wife, so it's just like one word, early mornings, sunrises, you know, like, toilets, showers, like all the things that we actually should be grateful for that people would have died to have, you know, 200 years ago that we just take for granted. Right. But I'm going to be intentional about making sure that it's with a pen and paper and not, you know, in the notes in my phone.
So I share all of this with my clients. I'm in the financial services industry. Yes, I'm a financial planner, but they're buying from me this whole mindset and how to implement this mindset in their life. So each one of my clients get one of these. This is for you.
Thank you.
And that's one of the original journals that I used
thick and heavy and
years
pretty.
Ago to write in. And it's a daily habit of mine. Again, I talk about it in What We're Worth, but there's something about pen and paper. And I always start out with, so people talk about gratitude journals.
Yeah.
I like the word celebrate and appreciate. Okay. And something appreciated goes up in value, right? So it's just that little subtle shift in the way we look at things.
So when you show somebody appreciation, by default, the relationship that you have with that individual appreciates.
Exactly. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I start out, I celebrate and appreciate. And then, and sometimes it's just this big run-on sentence. It's like this big, thick paragraph. That's cool. And I do that because it benefits me.
Yeah.
And it's okay, it's okay to be benefited.
Yeah.
It's okay to have these desires and these wants and to feel worthy of them.
Yeah.
Because the byproduct for me, for each of us, for all of us in our lives, when we feel good, we have more to offer to those around us. We can't pour from an empty cup.
Yeah.
We can't. So when my wife and I separated the fall of 2010, when her family moved her and the kids out, I went to work on myself and I sobered up. And 45 days later, I moved back in with my wife and kids. And a year ago, June 15th, our daughter gave birth to our grandson, Weston. He's just over a year old.
That's cool.
And I'm so glad that I'm here to be part of all of those experiences. My wife and I will celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary in December.
That's huge.
And our life together today, we're closer today than we ever have been, because of the focus on our human life value assets. And if you're, I'm going to say a man, because I'm a married businessman with kids, so I'm going to speak to the men, but it applies to the women too. But if you're a man and you're doing all this work on yourself and you ever say to yourself, but my wife's not, eliminate that and just keep doing the work and show up and be the example.
Amen.
Because it wears off. Your kids see you, you're right. We know this, we read this, but be very clear that it's not what we say, it's what we do in our family and with our clients and those around us. So lead by example. lead by example and find joy and peace in that, and know that it's okay to feel good. And as we do this work and we commit to continue to do the work on a daily basis, we will feel worthy of the results around us.
Mm-hmm.
The prosperity is a byproduct. Human life value is the source and creator of all property value. Property value is prosperity, financial prosperity. And so commit to increasing your human life value assets, knowing that the property value assets will come. It's a natural byproduct of it. They cannot not come into our life.
It might not come as quickly as you'd like, but they're on the way. Regardless,
for sure. Regardless. Dollars follow value.
I like what you said about that in terms of, you know, there was an individual or is an individual in our mastermind, you know, that hit me up like when he first joined, you know, a year and a half ago and was like, hey, man, you know, he's hyped, like doing all these new things, you know, trying to develop and create this individual that that one, he could be proud of. And secondly, sure. You know, that could help his business get to another level.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, how do I get my wife to do all this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, you don't. Like like now all of a sudden, imagine a year or two ago that she starts doing all this stuff and then starts forcing it on you when you're not even ready.
Yeah.
I says, it's all too quick, too, like you join this thing and then you're starting to do this and then you're going to start putting pressure on her. And then like, and then if anything, you're going to fracture the relationship. Like maybe she's just seeing how long.
How long is it going to stick?
Yeah.
Are they going to revert back to their old self?
Is this really who you like? Is this how you're going to show up forever? Or is this just like a gym membership thing where in 2 months, you know, you got hot and heavy on something and you went, you know, everybody's, you know, bought a brand new set of clubs because they're going to golf a lot more, or the mountain bike because they're going to go mountain biking more. And then they don't, and it just collects dust, right? And so maybe she's waiting for you to fall off. Maybe she's waiting to see how committed you truly are to 100%. This thing that you're doing
100%.
Prior to her buying all the way in. Just because you're all the way in at this moment doesn't mean that they will. Are you doing it because you want to drag them along, or are you just doing it because it's the right thing to do for you, for your yourself, family, for everybody that's in your ecosystem to set a bar extremely high or set an example, right? If I told my kids to go run, they're not going to go run. But the funny thing is when my son last year, when I ran 38, came with me and saw me do it and ran the last few miles with me.
Cool.
He says, I want to run 7 miles for my 7th birthday, Dad.
So cool.
And I said, let's do it. So we ran 7 miles for his 7th birthday months later. I never told him to do that. It was exactly what you just talked about. He saw something and wanted to emulate what he saw because
they're
it was true
watching.
And real.
They're
like he could
watching.
Feel the energy that was in the RV and kind of what was being accomplished and what was being done. And he wanted to set out and do something hard and difficult and feel that for himself. Right after that, my daughter, I want to do 13 miles for my 13th birthday. I said, cool, let's do it. So we did it. And so this was zero pressure from me. Like they are a product of the environment.
Yep.
And I've shown them what is possible. And I sat with my daughter and I said, if I have to sacrifice my whole life to be an example to other people and to create a ripple effect that's positive in other people's lives, in their families, in their kids, and then their kids' kids, then I'll do it. And then I said, but is it really me sacrificing living to my fullest potential? Or is everybody else out there really the one sacrificing by not?
Well said, brother.
You know what I mean? Said. And so don't pressure anybody to do anything. This is your journey and you have the idea, the seeds planted in you from God. It's there. So honor the emotion and the feeling and the intuition that you have to start making the changes that you know that you need to make. But just because you're ready, don't force everybody else around you to be ready on your time, right? Yeah. So,
hey, Trevor, I'm recognizing an opportunity right now.
Cool.
So I'm just going to run with it.
Good.
Your 7-year-old, your 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And those experiences that you had with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've already done this. I'm just going to make sure
okay,
that you really allow yourself to feel that, brother. it's okay to feel the pat on the back, man. That's massive. 24, 25 year old, 20 strung out on drugs, to having the experiences that'll last a lifetime with your kids. You're teaching and leading by example right now today.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to feel that, brother. Like, just like really feel that in the early morning when you're on your runs and stuff. Bask in that gratitude and that appreciation, that celebration, that magnificence of what is around you, because it's right there.
Yeah.
That's going to fuel you even more, man. It's huge. Massive.
Yeah,
you're welcome. Cool. I didn't get that from my dad.
Yeah, me neither.
And my dad offered me lots of other things, but I didn't get that from him. And I'm so glad that I've offered it to my kids.
Yeah.
And I am now, and especially my grandson. So allow yourself to feel that. It's massive. It's huge, brother.
Isn't
it massive?
Thank you.
Yeah. Beautiful.
No, it was two very, very proud moments. You know, mile five with my 7-year-old. Cool. My legs are jiggly. It's normal. Like,
dude,
let's keep it trucking.
Man.
And then my daughter at mile 9 just started breaking down into tears.
Oh man.
She says, I can't. She's like, I can't do it.
See?
And so I just hugged her. You know, I have a picture in my phone of me and her, and, you know, her in tears.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you knew it was going to be tough. Isn't that why you committed to doing it? I said, we're leaving the limitations of the old version of you right here. And we're creating a new bar, a new standard of what's possible for you. And anytime that you create a new, you have to go up against friction. I said, it took us 9 miles to find your friction point, the point where it actually truly matters. And so I had a little conversation with her right there. And I said, let's run to that car. So we ran to the car and we walked. I said, okay, now let's run to that tree.
Beautiful.
I was like, we've got to eat this elephant one bite at a time, because she can't see herself 4 more miles.
Yeah.
But she could see the car.
The next car.
She could see the tree, right? And so the lesson there is like, you might not see this yourself in this end goal that you have, but is there a car? Or what represents the car? What represents the tree, right?
Like, 100%.
There's something there. Just start chipping away at it. And if it's hurt, if it hurts and you're in pain, congratulations. You're at a point where you're actually making true progress, right? And when I run these, you know, 37, 38, 39 miles, I always say roughly, hey, the first 20 miles just to get us to the point where we actually have to start doing work. Where the mental work kicks in, right? The physicals, you know, we drag ourselves to the point where we're in pain. Now the work really begins.
Yeah.
This is where progress is going to happen, right?
And you, there's such a massive opportunity in that for you to allow yourself to really feel that yourself.
Yeah, I'm not good with feelings.
Yeah, it's an opportunity. You and I love opportunities.
Yeah.
The listeners love opportunity.
Yeah.
Trevor, this is an opportunity for you to allow yourself to feel more of that.
Yeah.
And it's okay to feel the pat on the back, brother. It is, because that's going to create even more momentum.
I worry about that, though. I worry about over crediting or too many self pats on the back.
Yeah. So
because I've always been the underdog, right? Like I've had to, you know, have a chip on my shoulder to do what I've done. Yeah. Right.
What if you didn't?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, test it.
Yeah.
Find out. There's something there for you. There's something there for you.
I believe it.
It's been there for me too.
Yeah.
And I've been on that journey the last couple of years.
I think
also,
the chip can take us to a certain point, but eventually we have to, you know, remove it and live based upon not proving everybody else wrong, but eventually getting to the point where you want to have massive contribution.
What if the other actually allows you to create even more?
Yeah.
What if?
Yeah. I'm sure. Because I feel like I don't quite, I'm running out of things to do to keep a chip on my shoulder, right?
You're right there,
bro. And so it's kind of like, okay, there's some adjustments that have to be made.
Yeah.
And I, you know, even with our mastermind, like that's not really profitable. We don't make a bunch of money, but it feels good. It feels like it's the right thing to do. It feels like I'm making
personal progress in terms of giving back and creating a ripple effect. Yeah. When I see somebody lose 50 pounds or 100 pounds, or, you know, say that they gave their child a hug for the first time in 21 years, because when he first joined the mastermind day one, I gave him a hug and he said, "How crazy is it that these strangers gave me a hug and I haven't hugged my own kid?"
Yeah.
And he goes home and does that.
Yeah.
And his kid thought it was super weird at first. Yeah. Like, what do you do? You know, this ain't normal for us. But he was trying to create, you know, a new normal.
Yeah.
And so some of those things bring me more fulfillment and happiness and purpose than just the dollar bills. You know, if I end up making a bunch of money from something like that, great, cool. But it's bigger than that for me.
And right? Who knows what that's going to create?
Yeah.
So when we set out towards this target, this goal in our life, it's out here. And the fact that we set it and we're moving towards it, that action of moving towards it, along the way, we discover something else.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have never discovered that something else had we not set that original target.
Yes.
And that other thing takes us off into this direction. And then next thing you know, this becomes larger than this.
Yes.
Dan Sullivan, a strategic coach, calls that a strategic byproduct. So be open to that, the strategic byproducts in our life. You guys don't know right now, doing these masterminds, what it's actually going to create. You see what it's creating right now.
Yeah.
But after this next one, you could be opened up to this vision or something that happens as a result of setting out in that area.
Yeah.
And that other thing is going to be far greater. So stay open to those strategic byproducts.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that.
You know,
a lot of the things that we're currently doing right now are just a vehicle to something else. And we've got to-
You're giving value. Boom, 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 creating massive value.
Yes.
Dollars follow value. It's coming. It's happening.
Yeah.
And you guys are great at seizing opportunity. Hence why you've been successful up to this point.
Yeah.
And any of the listeners, that's going to continue. That's going to happen.
Dude, I love today's conversation.
It's been fun for me, man.
Yeah. Likewise. Yeah. Just so you know, me and Cal do look up to you. You're an individual that we see putting in work and doing all the right things and trying to, you know, enhance the world to make a better place through some of the experiences that weren't the best for you.
Yeah.
But extracting the lessons and moving forward, right? Kind of as Garrett talked about, after you going through what you went through. And so, one, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you, you know, writing a book like that that's easy to read, that's a page turner. And still brings a lot of value. It's not like just a book just to be an author. It's a book that has the ability to enhance and change people's lives, provided they actually apply the principles.
Sure.
Isn't that, you know, it's an application that you see benefits of anything. And we talked about over digesting information. This is definitely something that's easy to digest and easy to implement, because we already know the financial balance sheet. It's just kind of carrying it over. Yeah. So where does somebody find what we're worth? How do they purchase a copy? Yeah. You know, all that.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And thank you for all that.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Definitely on Amazon. So we have it available on Amazon. And if anybody wants a head start, they can go to Vault, V-A-U-L-T. We can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be in the
vaultais.com. And right on the homepage, that's my business website, there's an assessment. It's a free assessment to look at 10 key areas of our lives financially and look at the property value and the human life value assets in our life and see exactly where we're at. Because how can we make change if we don't know where we're at, right? We got to get clear on where we're at first before we can get clear on what we want.
Yes.
And it's going to assist you of where you're at and ideas of where you can go to create that want. So if you want a head start, it's free. Yes, we're going to get your name. Yes, we're going to get your email. Yes, we're going to market to you, but you can unsubscribe. It's super easy, right?
It's a button.
Yep, it's a button. But if you like it, consume it.
Yeah.
If we can assist you, we want to.
Yeah.
And definitely go on, order the book. Please leave me a review and share it with others. And you can find that on Amazon. The assessment, I'll do this. I give this to all my top clients, but for the first, I don't know, let's say 20, the first 20, when they put in who referred and they'll put in real business owners of the podcast, right? I'll give them what's called the Infinity Wealth Tool. And it's over 9 pages of questions that we can ask ourselves, just like in The Road Less Stupid, Keith Cunningham, and asking ourselves powerful questions. I give these to all my top clients. And they work on it to use to gain clarity on what's an asset, what's a liability on their human life value balance sheet, and how to take a liability to an asset. And those questions will assist you in your thinking time. It's called the Infinity Wealth Tool. Okay. I created it with my dear friend.
Where did they get that? On the website?
If they'll do the assessment, gotcha. The first 20 people that does the assessment on vaultais.com, and they put who referred you, real business owners, then the first 20 people will give that assessment to.
Cool. Yeah. Appreciate that, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Guys, I know that there was plenty of value shared in today's episode. There's a lot of people that are struggling that don't know what they're worth.
Yeah.
You know, just because it says $21 in your bank account, you're worth way more than that, right?
For sure.
And so pick up the book, read the book, make yourself better for it by actually applying some of the principles that he talks about. Share this episode with somebody that you love and that you care about. Rate and review the podcast. Continue to show us love there. We appreciate you guys. Other than that, kick ass. Take care. We'll see y'all next week.